Elizabeth Roddick has joined us from New Life Pharmacy. We're going to talk about some of the latest medical headlines. How are you, Elizabeth?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Now, there seems to be a push on recognising the symptoms of sepsis this month. Can you just remind us what sepsis is, please?
I think the best way to describe it is it's an infection which becomes serious and complicated. If you live in Scotland, interestingly enough, every pharmacy in Scotland has a very large poster in their window.
Right.
In fact, advertising what sepsis is about and what you can do about it.
How would you know if someone has sepsis?
Well,
how would someone know? Sorry,
yeah,
how
sure.
Would someone know?
Yeah, sure. Symptoms are shivering uncontrollably, confusion. You have either a very high or low body temperature, your heartbeat, racing heartbeat, problems in breathing, and not passing as much urine as normal.
What happens if these symptoms are not picked up then?
The person could go into septic shock, and that could mean that blood pressure could go dangerously low. And you've got dizziness, fainting, confusion, even disorientation. And then possibly stomach problems come in, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, slurred speech, breathlessness, and really, you might not even be producing any urine at that point, for example, for a complete day. You feel cold, clammy, mottled skin, and even a loss of consciousness.
So I would imagine you've got to get medical help pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's the most important thing to do. If you do suspect sepsis, then the person needs to be taken to A&E immediately.
So what about treatment?
If it's detected early, then we can deal with even just antibiotics in your own home. It's when it's left, maybe people not realising it's septic shock, then it can be fatal. And what can happen is a collapse of vital organs. The important thing is if it's detected early, then you can make a complete recovery. And that's the most important message we want to get out there.
Well, I hope that reassures people, because it's certainly been in the news an awful lot lately. Now, a drug used by patients with diabetes holds potential in helping people lose weight and keeping it off.
Yeah, the researchers were from the US, Colombia and Sweden, and they were looking at the drug metformin.
Okay, that's the drug used just now for diabetes, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Barry. It's often given when someone receives a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. Now, that's the type of diabetes which is associated with people who are overweight. They followed up these people who had been part of an earlier study which looked at metformin versus placebo for the weight loss effect. And the people were divided into three. First cohort were given a strict diet and exercise plan. The second group took the metformin. And the third group took a placebo, like a sugar tablet. The important thing is about a randomised controlled trial is that no one knew whether they were taking the placebo or the metformin. That's important. And the researchers were looking to see after a year, had there been any weight loss or gain, and whether some had developed type 2 diabetes itself. The second year, everyone was offered the strict diet and exercise plan, since that had been the most successful. The basic results were that 28.5% of people, just over a quarter taking the drug, had lost 5% of their weight in the first year, compared to 62.6% on the strict diet and exercise plan. Placebo group, it was just 13.4%. When the researchers followed people up over 14 years, the greatest number of people that kept the weight off were the metformin group. But I think before we all rush for the drug, the research itself has some flaws. I mean, this was a secondary research study looking only at a small group from the original research. And what about genetic factors? That wasn't taken into account. And the results were based on only 5% of the people from the original trial. 70% weren't even included. I think for metformin to be used as an aid for weight loss, there would need to be a much more robust trial and long-term safety issues. That's really important to get that, maybe through another trial. The good thing is it's been used by many people with type 2 diabetes in the past. So there's a lot of information out there at the moment. But to me, the most interesting point that's come out of the study is that a strict diet and exercise was shown to have the greatest weight loss.
Imagine that.
Does that tell us anything new? No, I think we all know that.
Now, another headline which caught my eye: skipping breakfast may raise risk of heart disease by up to 87%, a study has found.
I know. Barry, do you eat breakfast?
Well, I can honestly answer that I do at the moment. I go through phases, Elizabeth, I'm honest. But yeah, I do. I tend to have my 3 meals at the regular times.
Yeah, well, I, interestingly enough, have a smoothie, which I think has all nutrition in it, and maybe people might want to hear about that.
Yeah,
so.
I would love to hear about that.
Okay, maybe another time.
Maybe another time. We'll get some details from you.
Okay. But this was a US study. Researchers were looking to see if missing out breakfast was linked to deaths from cardiovascular disease or any cause. They used interviews. Over 39,000 people were asked questions like, how often do you eat breakfast? Every day? Rarely? Never? Some people weekends only. The study was performed between 1988 and 1994, and they followed up to the year 2011 to see how many people had died and from what cause. And with all the exclusions, they ended up with 6,550 people. They then analysed these people who were average age 53 years old, 48% of them were male, and most people ate breakfast every day, 25% some days, 11% rarely, and 5% never. Interestingly, the people that never ate breakfast were more likely to be smokers, had a history of being a heavy alcohol drinker, physically inactive, poor diet, lower socioeconomic status, the usual sort of things. But the results were that 35% of the original cohort had died, including 619 from cardiovascular causes. Now, that was 9% of the sample. Mm-hmm. People who never ate breakfast had an 87% increased risk of death from cardiovascular disease compared with people who ate breakfast every day. But the problem is the study doesn't actually prove that not eating breakfast, don't worry out there, okay, is the direct cause of cardiovascular death. You just have to look at the health and lifestyles of those who did miss breakfast. I think that's an important
point. Well, that's reassuring, because I was just Googling whilst you were speaking there, looking for smoothie recipes for tomorrow morning. That's reassuring.
And the trouble with one-off interviews is that people change their habits over time. So at that one point, maybe they didn't eat breakfast, but a couple of years later, maybe they married someone who made breakfast for them.
And also breakfast sizes as well. I've been to America, they have huge portions. What you having? Are you having porridge or even a fried breakfast? I'm sure that all contributes.
Yeah, I mean,
a healthy
breakfast or grabbing a bacon sandwich while catching the train. I think the message, yes, it's part of a healthy lifestyle, your breakfast. But I think the most important thing is what you eat.
Definitely. Definitely. Now, we've just had European Immunisation Week that ran from the 23rd to the 29th of April. That's about vaccinations, isn't it?
Yeah. For example, flu vaccinations, believe it or not, are being ordered now from practices, but will be manufactured over the summer once the strains are decided upon. If you're elderly, pregnant, ready of an illness, then it's important to get vaccinated from September. That's when we'll start again. Now, many people will have heard in the news that measles outbreaks are becoming much more prevalent, and that's because not every child is being vaccinated.
What about travel vaccines then?
Well, I was thinking perhaps, first of all, talking about the problems if you don't have vaccination and a child gets. I think that's important to get out there. If a child gets measles, Barry, they may suffer from severe complications. Pneumonia, that's the infection of the lung, encephalitis, swelling of the brain. They may need to be hospitalised and could die. As many as one of every 20 children with measles get pneumonia, and that's the most common cause of death from measles in young children.
An awful lot, isn't
it? I think that message needs to get out there. It's really important to get your child vaccinated.
No. Thanks very much indeed. That's been really informative, as always. I love all the studies you pick as well, because they all seem to be like 10-year studies, 5-year studies. Where do they find these people? Now, are you going to tell us about this smoothie then?
Well, I was going to actually talk about travel vaccines first. Is that all right,
Barry? Yes, please do.
Yeah, it was just, I think right now a lot of people are travelling far afield, and it's very, very important to get the right advice before your trip. So, for example, your pharmacist or nurse can advise on what's needed. So if someone comes into my pharmacy, I sit them down and go through their itinerary. Where are they going? What sort of trip is it? Is it accommodation in a 5-star hotel or a campsite in the outback? Also, are they liable to be close to medical help? For example, would they need rabies vaccine? That's from rabid dogs. I mean, if you're going to encounter bats, that's from caves, or dogs abroad, particularly running or cycling, the dogs are attracted to that, and that's obviously in countries where rabies is a problem, and the vaccine may be given in advance. But many places do require hepatitis A typhoid, and that's because of hygiene issues. And even if you're just going through a country that has yellow fever to reach your destination, even though the country you're going to has no yellow fever, you must get that jag. And obviously your vaccination history, what's happened in the past. And please seek advice well in advance, because many people arrive in the pharmacy or arrive at their nurse saying, "Look, I'm going next week." It's too late, because many vaccines take at least 2 weeks to go.
So do your homework.
But to go back to the smoothie, why don't we put it on some sort of platform? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. Listen, how can people get in touch with you if they have any questions or queries?
Yeah, my phone number is 01416376000, and the website's all the W's, newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
Smashing. Elizabeth Roddick, thanks very much indeed for popping in to see us, and we'll speak to you again in a fortnight.
Thanks, Barry.